Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey, Gavin, with us from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin wants Asnutic Community College in the Sweet 16. I'd rather see NC State.
No, wait, who is that again? What community college?
Asnutic Community College.
That's interesting. I might watch that.
Exactly. The rest of us are going to watch NC State. Little athleticism. Huh? Well, three really good guards.
Okay.
Some power people inside. Meanwhile, you like look at Asnutic Community College. Look how great they're doing. Fabulous.
Well, but right?
Get them out of the tournament. Steady diet of that. Get them out.
I see Kentucky on TV all the time.
Louisville's playing NC State. Watch that game. Athletes, strategy, good coaching. Come on.
All right, I'll give it a try.
Come on. It'd be fun. Big crowd, dome, whole deal.
It has to be. It has to be a big crowd.
Asnutic Community College? No, they're playing in a parking lot. All right. But that's a great story, though.
Well, I use Florida Gulf Coast as an example last hour. I mean, Florida Gulf Coast was a fun story because one of the things that came out of it is, by the way, their dorms have beachfront property. Their dorms are beachfront property and have a view. I wouldn't have known that if they weren't in the tournament. I find that stuff intriguing. Now, is it good basketball? That's debatable. I do understand what you're saying about that, though.
The coach left and took the USC job.
That's because he was the flavor of the month after that.
Okay. Even he knew it was time to get out of the school that had the dorms that faced the beachfront.
You talk about recruiting. Hey, we were in the NCAA tournament, and by the way, your freshman dorms have beachfront property right next to it.
And that you love that story.
I'm just saying it was something about the university I would not have known if they wouldn't have made a run in the tournament.
Fabulous. USC's a private school. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Okay. Well, see. You're learning something every day.
And I didn't think they'd be this far in the tournament either.
All right. Let's get to Tim Owen, Blue White Illustrated. Tim, welcome. After watching that scintillating, exciting map round finish, it probably overwhelmed everybody in the arena.
Good to be back, Steve. How are you?
So what was that like to see a championship end like that?
I'm not even sure how you explain that. I mean, I've been watching wrestling my whole life and covering this Penn State team for the last five seasons, and I've never seen anything end like that. I mean, even Matt Brown afterwards talking to him, I think, you know, there's a little bit of a bittersweet moment. Obviously, he wanted to win the championship, and he was pleased and excited about that. But just the way it ended, it almost was, you know, melodramatic. I don't know if that's the right word. But, yeah, I mean, just craziness. 21 seconds left, he's trailing, and then he gets another stall point called on Wilt, which gives him a point tied up, and then a little bit of gamesmanship there, if you want to call that, at the end, where he felt the hand locked around his waist, and which is legal when you're standing on your feet, but right. As soon as you drop down to a knee, which Matt did, you have to let go of that inner lock, and Wilkes didn't do it in time, and after replay and review, which by my count it took about 6 minutes for them to replay it and then re-replay it to determine that he indeed had his hand blocked while Matt's knee was on the mat with 1 second left to give him the fifth point, the go-ahead point to win a national championship. pretty bizarre. Pretty bizarre.
Yeah.
By the way to describe it. But, you know, Matt has a perfect quote to lead off his press conference right after that. You know, to put it in context a little bit, I've covered Matt for his whole Penn State career since he's been here, and, you know, gotten to know him pretty well. And you know, his interview style is a lot like his wrestling style. Let's say this. He's all, you know, very straightforward, technical, concise. You know, not a lot of wasted movements on the mat, not a lot of wasted words in interviews. You know, get to the point. He's a smart kid, 4.0 student. What he says is always very intelligent, but he doesn't waste a lot of words getting there. We'll put it that way. So he sits down at the interview table after the match, you know, still out of breath, tired, and he looks up at us, and they ask for an opening statement. And you know, I'm expecting, you know, something very straightforward and, you know, kind of what you'd expect from Matt Brown over the years. And he looks up and says, you know, you grow up your whole life dreaming of hitting a grand slam in the ninth inning. And then he pauses and he says, and sometimes you hit a bunt. It was just, yeah, it summarized it perfectly. It really did.
He had quite a journey to get to this spot and a lot of close calls to get to this spot as well. As you've watched him take this journey, what really opened the door for him to finally break through and be that champion?
Well, one thing was Ed Ruth moving up to 184 a couple of years. Matt Brown came to Penn State after a two-year Mormon mission, having been recruited by Cal and the coaching staff at Iowa State a couple of years before that. Once Cal came to Penn State, Matt was granted his release from Iowa State, and once he got back from Africa, where he spent a two-year religious mission, he came to Penn State and at 174 pounds, and that's where Ed Ruth was. That's where Ed Ruth started his career. So Matt kind of just, you know, was a depth guy for the first year on the lineup and trained behind Ed Ruth, trained with Ed Ruth, and with Morgan McIntosh, and was kind of the utility infielder, so to speak, for his first year. And then once Ed moved up to 84 a couple seasons ago, Matt slid into that 74 spot, and he's just progressively gotten better throughout the last couple years. And Cal Sanderson said something to this effect after the match, and Casey Cunningham, too, the assistant coach, is just Matt has maximized his potential. You know, compared to an Ed Ruth, compared to a David Taylor, who just have talent out the years, Matt is a guy who has to work for it a lot harder, and he is. You ask anybody on that team, Steve, and you know, the first guy they point to when you ask for an example of work ethic and lifestyle and you know, living the sport of wrestling, the first person they point to is Matt Brown. So I think this is a culmination of hard work. I mean, of course he's a talented kid. You don't get this far without having talent. But I think it's a combination of everything that, you know, finally came all together in St. Louis last week. And it didn't end with a bang. We'll say that way. Well, it ended with a bunt, using Matt's words.
I know a lot of people had looked at this season and said, look, you know, the four-year run probably will come to a close. That probably will be in the top five or six, which they ended up. But boy, you know, you watch what happens when 15-16 rolls around. Part of this is going to be what everybody else has. But should they realistically be feeling that way?
Without a doubt. I mean, certainly it's not getting any easier. I mean, Ohio State has quite a bit of a young talent. I mean, they're obviously losing Logan Stever, four-time national champ, but otherwise, the majority of their roster is coming back. Iowa has some young talent. Minnesota as well. I mean, your normal faces in the Big Ten are going to be locked and loaded again in 15 and 16, and even further than that. So yeah, they're very talented. I actually ran an update a little way too early preview, if you want to call it that, next season. I ran that on BlueWhiteIllustrated.com yesterday, and it offers just a little bit of a glimpse into the guys who are redshirting this year. You know, obviously the All-Americans, Nico Megalutis and Zane Rutherford, they'll be back next year after taking a year off mid-career. They competed freestyle during this year and had a successful year and, you know, really set the tone in the practice room. And then there's the freshman class that Cal redshirted the entire freshman class this year. And you have guys like Nick Nevels, who will be the starting heavyweight next year if he recovers from an injury that he suffered this season. You have a guy like Bo Nickel, who's one of the best wrestlers Texas high schools have ever produced. He's from Allen, Texas, and he looks to be the guy who's going to fill in for Matt Brown at 174. Then the guy that everybody's raving about, the coaching staff especially, I think Cal, specifically pointed to this kid multiple times this year with high praise, is Jason Nolf. And really not sure where he's going to fit into the lineup next year. 57 looks to be a possibility. That's where he wrestled this year. But you can't cross off 65, depending on how he grows. But, you have guys like that who are all top 10 recruits coming out of high school who all redshirted this year, competed very well on the unattached open tournament circuit. I think combined out of those three, there was four losses. And so they wrestled well. They put stuff together this year and grew quite a bit in the practice room. I mean, hearing some of the practice reports towards the end of the season on these guys, it's almost unbelievable of how much of a stride they've made since they've been on campus. So once they get into a single next year and are able to travel with the team and wear the Penn State singlet, they should bring a whole new load of improvement to the lineup next year. And that's to mention other freshmen who are redshirted this year who will contribute, maybe not next year, but the year after. A guy like Anthony Kassar, he's a New Jersey native who looks to be the replacement of Morgan McIntosh in a couple years. And then Shakur Rashid, who's a native of Longwood, New York, who was a two-time state champ over there. And he's kind of the wild card in this equation because he could possibly wrestle anywhere from 65 to 84. Coming up through is a little bit of old talent, too, with those All-Americans, Rutherford and Magaludis, returning to the lineup. So it does look to be a bright future, but it doesn't get any easier, when you're talking about the Big Ten.
Now, obviously, you've got to keep rolling here, which means rolling into football. It's another big recruiting weekend coming up for Penn State. What's on tap this weekend with some of the talent rolling in this time?
Yeah, another big-time recruiting weekend. They're not necessarily calling it a junior day from what I've gathered. They had that back a month ago at the end of February. But again, some of the top prospects on campus, a bunch of great, solid offensive linemen with offers will be on campus. And that's one of the positions of priority for this class, defensive line as well. And there's a couple of good defensive linemen on campus last week, will be again this week. It's a chance to get these. We talked about Junior Day last month. That's when Franklin and the staff let to get all the top recruits on campus at once. They kind of just tell them what they're all about and kind of introduce themselves. This weekend, though, with a spring practice going on, it's kind of going to present an opportunity for these recruits to see how the coaching staff works, in action on the practice field, how the players respond to their coaching, and that just gives them a little bit better of a sense of, what they're dealing with. Because during the recruiting process, you only hear good things and later, whichever school it might be. But once you're able to see a spring practice and see how it's run and how fast-paced it is, it gives the recruitive and individual perspective of seeing things for themselves rather than just taking someone's word.
The other part, too, about getting a group on campus together where they can talk among themselves. And everybody does this, but still the advantage of having that happen where they can discuss among themselves as they form relationships among each other about what they'd like to do.
Well, yeah, that's big. And, go back to a couple of recruiting classes to use as an example. Adam Brenneman and Christian Hackenberg in the class of 2013, they came together very early in the recruiting process. Christian committed first, and then Adam soon after, even though Adam was basically a Penn State lock from the beginning. They teamed right up. They got close, became good friends while they were still in high school. Social media helps that a lot now, Steve, with Twitter and
sure.
Text messaging. They're able to constantly stay in contact. But they're able to set the roots while they're on campus together. And they're able to, bounce ideas off each other. Some guys have seen other campuses, so they're able to compare what they're seeing now compared to what they've seen at other places. Is he considering Penn State? Is he considering other schools? So those relationships are huge. You hear James Franklin talk about that all the time. And a lot of times he's talking specifically the coach-recruit relationship.
Sure.
But the recruit-to-recruit relationship is just as big. And, you know, for example, this season, or this recruiting class of 2016, they've got a commitment from Shane Simmons, a four-star defensive end, top 100 player down in Maryland, who's been on campus almost every weekend that Penn State has a recruiting weekend. And he's kind of the lead guy, de facto lead guy, so to speak. And he's on campus. He's urging these guys along, trying to, you know, put Penn State in their ear a little bit. Not overly pushing, but is this kind of being a little, you know, bug in the air a little bit to say, hey, I'm coming here. You want to, if you're a defensive tackle, you know, come play on the defensive line with me. Those type of things, you know, those relate farther along here.
Well, Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Tim Owen, Blue White Illustrated. We'll come back with more in a moment, including a series of Kevin complaints on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday.
No, it's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Remember, every day is Hyundai?
Hyundai.
And it's the Lease We Can Do sales event going on now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Hyundai.
The lease we can do is cut the crap and give you low payments and no money down. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata SE for only $237 a month for 36 months with zero down. Zilch. Nada. Or lease a 2015 Hyundai Elantra SE for only $183 a month for 36 months. Again, no money down. Or you could go green. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata Hybrid for $250 a month for 36 months, and you guessed it, zero due at signing. No hidden fees, no plus tax, and blah, blah, blah. It's the lease we can do. These cars are here, these deals are real, and they're only at your home for Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai,
Hyundai.
In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, where every day is Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Lease is based on 10,000 miles per year, zero total due at signing with approved HMFR Tier 1 financing tax included. See dealer for complete.
Now, see, now that's a clever bump.
No.
Wow, well, I gotta praise your work.
The last hour was a clever. The angry young man was, that was clever. This was just because it sounded cool.
Okay.
Sorry to disappoint.
Try to pray every day. All right.
Your poor kids. Oh. What do you think? It's all right.
No, I tell them they're great.
Oh, all so you save the rest of it for just me. I see.
Oh, no, you earn what you get. So, look, check around the station. You're treated the same way everywhere.
That's probably true.
Okay, I mean, really. I mean, you know, except for Sean Carey, who's just, you know.
No, I'm hanging out with the Chief this weekend. Sunday night, I'm hanging out with the Chief at the Northumberland County All-Star Girls-Boys Basketball game. So that's where it is. Spending time with the Chief.
Does he know?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he texted me this morning. He said, we're doing that game, right? I'm like, yeah. Okay, good.
He's just trying to clear his schedule. All right. Just so you know. Indiana has a new law that was just put into effect that may affect what you see with the possibility of getting a Super Bowl, NCAA Final Four, and so forth. Indiana Governor Mike Pence earlier today signed into law a bill that would prohibit state and local laws that subsequently burden the ability of people, including businesses and associations, to follow their religious beliefs. The bottom line is basically, I guess the key to this is that if you are of the religious belief about lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and say at a restaurant you don't want to serve them because of your religious belief, you don't have to. Or allow them into your establishment. And There's a couple statements here from Mark Emmert, which we'll naturally just skip over. But people are people, for goodness sakes. Life is not a crusade. Next half hour, why Kevin can't stand the NCAA basketball tournament.
That's not true.
You've ripped it the entire show.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. I guess I found out from people in the building there that you're upset I'm going to be in the studio on Friday.
I'm not upset. Who said I was upset?
Listen to you, voice high.
It's just my normal awfully, voice. Sorry, there's awfully, no depth in my voice.
Awfully defensive. Jeez.
No.
I'm just there to have a good time.
I'm not saying I'm ecstatic, but
stop over at Brewer's Outlet, get some barrel pickles, stock up for the weekend, all sorts of things, The heck.
Pickles.
I love them. Love them.
I tried making my own pickles this year. It did not come out the same. I should have known better.
Okay. Why don't you save that for the morning show? That'd be perfect. All right.
That's my point. The pickles are so good at Brewer's Outlet. I couldn't match them. I don't even know why I tried.
Exactly. I don't know why you tried it. I'm just going to go over there. No offense. Let's see. Coming up tonight, Wichita State against Notre Dame. That's the opening game in Cleveland this evening. And the other half of the bracket, West Virginia against Kentucky. What? I thought they pressed all the time. Well, you don't press after you miss shots. And if they can make some shots tonight and get their press set up, Kentucky was only pressed 5% of the time all season. But in that 5%, they turned it over 26% of the time. One out of every four times that Kentucky was pressed, they turned it over. Meanwhile, the other two games on tap tonight will be out west at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. It'll be North Carolina against Wisconsin. And they say that Trayvon Jackson is a game-time decision, which means he won't play. In the pros, a game-time decision usually means you are going to play. In college, a game-time decision normally means you're not going to play. That's called code. Kennedy Meeks might play some tonight. Sprained his left knee in the win over Arkansas. Did not do much during the opening practice, the open practice that was yesterday. Had limited contact earlier in a closed practice, but in the open practice yesterday, remember, they have those one-hour open practices the day before games. So fans got to, and let it go. It's free. It's a nice fun outreach thing. And the other half of the bracket tonight is Xavier against Arizona. Kevin was very upset with the 10:17 start time.
Yeah, there's no way I'm going to be able to watch that whole game.
And then I pointed out to him the game's in Los Angeles. It's 7:17 out there.
I'm well aware that it's out there. I'm just saying I never will be able to stay awake to watch that whole game.
Well, you got to man up. You either want to see it or you don't.
I mean, that's really late, man.
Really late? Oh, you got tomorrow. You'll coast through tomorrow morning show. I mean, you got Vinny Clossy on the show for 2 hours. You're good.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Dr. Walter Brash will be on. Movie Mike will be on tomorrow. You're on autopilot tomorrow. Come on, watch the games. Have some fun. Oh, that's right. You want to watch Kevin Spacey on Netflix. I got it.
I'm almost finished, too.
A lot of
nice. I got to give you credit there.
Cat Barber, by the way, says his remarks to President Obama about his bracket were not personal. Remember he made that comment about after they knocked out Villanova, where they played, I mean, NC State played really well in beating Villanova. Played like a team that had nothing to lose against Villanova, which played like a team that had everything to lose and did. And so then they won 71-68, and Barber said Thursday that he was excited. He says it wasn't personal. And the president responded back that he understood the comment was made in the heat of the moment. There you go. Cat Barber off the hook with the White House. And he's in the Sweet 16 with a chance to get to the Elite Eight. And they got a real shot tonight, too. Exhibition baseball today. Did your Phillies play today?
Yeah, they lost to Toronto, I believe.
4-1. See, you scored.
Yay.
There you go. Let's see here. It looks like it was a really good run. Yeah, see, you led the game 1-0.
What, in the first inning?
No, it led the game 1-0 into the eighth and lost 4-1.
Oh, that's even better.
Hernandez went 1-for-4. Sizemore went 1-for-4. Utley went 2-for-3, scored the run.
Wait a minute. That's what I want to know right there.
Howard went 0-for-4.
There we go. The big collar. How many times did he strike out?
Ruiz went 1-for-3 with a run with an RBI.
How many times did Howard strike out, though?
I only have the box score. I don't know.
Okay.
And I try not to get personal with these things where I'm trying to, like, you know, rip people to shreds. That's your job.
That's fine. Hamels went
five innings, gave up two hits, four strikeouts, walked three, gave up nothing. Garcia gave up nothing. Oliver gave up nothing. Giles gave up everything. And it was, by the way, the Toronto A squad. I mean, Josh Donaldson played, Reyes played. I mean, it was like, it was, you know, Russell Martin played, Bautista played. Yeah, if that. No errors. Yeah, there's a lot of positives out of this game. Lots of positives.
One negative, though, for the Phillies is Crawford, who was probably going to go to Reading, maybe stay down in Clearwater. He's injured, so he'll be out for a while. So they're not going to be moving him up anytime soon. Ashy's got a back problem. Yeah, Crawford's out 4-6.
Oh, no. The whole season's done.
No, I'm... Listen, he's not ready to come up to the majors. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, it's going to maybe slow his development just a little bit, you think?
Not really.
All right, fine.
Just means he'll miss extended spring training.
But you got to understand, the Phillies minor league.
No, there isn't.
I mean, he's
so... Jeff went 0-for-3 today.
Yay.
Blanco went 0-for-3. Danks went 0-for-2. Francoeur went 0-for-3. Wow, this is really depressing. Wow. Your guy Sizemore went 1-for-4. He's the team leader now at 232.
You're not making me feel better here.
Oh, no. I mean, there's a lot of... I mean, yeah, him 5-4. You're 11-12. Come on.
It's the spring. Howard DH today. Now, why do you explain... I don't understand. Why even have a DH in spring training on either side? Wouldn't this be a great opportunity for pitchers to hit... Even if you're an American League team, knowing that you're going to have to hit sooner or later? By the way, Howard struck out twice.
You're a fatalist.
twice.
Okay.
Hitting a whopping 224 this spring with 14 strikeouts.
How many hits?
11.
It's not good. He's blowing Mendoza away.
He's striking out more than he's hitting the baseball in play safely.
Well, the reason we wanted to use the DH at this time of year, look, you're just trying to get work for your guys.
No, I mean, and it was an American League, National League deal, so I get that.
Right, and as I pointed out a million times, I mean, nobody wants to watch a pitcher hit. I'm sorry.
I agree.
You know, nobody does. I love that when I hear people call, oh, no, it's the purity. Purity of what? I don't pay to watch Cole Hamels hit. I want him out there pitching.
It's taken me a long time to agree with you there, but I totally agree with you there.
I mean, after a while, you just, you know, I don't get it. I mean, I would rather see a lineup, you're kidding about Ryan Howard, but I would rather see a lineup that has Ryan Howard out there as the DH today instead of sitting it out.
Well, he's going to strike out a quarter of the time, but there is a chance he's going to hit one out, and it's a better chance than watching Cole Hamels hit one out.
Yeah, right, but that's not my point. My point is I'd rather, you know, go to a ball game, and if I'm going to get 100, and let's just use Ryan Howard as an example. I mean, you're no fan. It doesn't matter. But say, for example, if I'm going to get 155 games out of Ryan Howard as a combo first baseman DH as opposed to 130 games of first baseman, I got to sit him out 25 games. I think the fans always want to see the best players out there. And the DH is a way to always keep the best players and the biggest names out there. I mean, Alex Rodriguez, you know, for what all the problems he has, he's going to DH this year for the Yankees. A good chunk of the time. I just think it's a way to keep guys in the lineup. I think it's a very fan-friendly team. And again, the strategy.
Well, and you and I talked about this, I think it was the other day after the show. I said, you know,
people in American Legion, for God's sakes, do a double shift. I mean, really, don't make it seem like the Manhattan Project. All right? Oh, my God, the strategy. Like, it's not the Manhattan Project. It's a baseball game.
Well, you know, and you and I talked about this after the show the other day when we were just chatting. And I said, you know, in Little League Baseball, where I see an awful lot, the bunt is a very effective play because I would say a good 50% of the time or more, the batter's going to reach first base because you're forcing the infield to make an inexperienced player to make a play that's very difficult.
Sure. That's right.
At the major league, at the high school level, maybe, I don't know, maybe you go about 30% of the time and it's successful. When you get to the major league level, I can't tell you the last time I saw somebody beat out a bunt successfully. It's rare.
Right, but it does happen, though. I mean,
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying it's rare, and it's not an exciting play anymore. I mean, when it does happen, sure, it's exciting, but when you're looking at maybe a success rate of 10%, it's not really that exciting of a play. And you know darn well if the pitcher's up to bat and there's a runner on first, second, or wherever, he's laying down a bunt. He's not surprising anybody.
Well, I mean, and you do bunt in certain situations with certain guys. I mean, I get to the eighth inning or whatever of a game, and I'm in a tie ball game, and I'm the home team. I got a chance to bunt a guy to second to set up an inning. I bunt.
But that's okay because it's not a guarantee.
Because there's the strategy of what I'm trying to do. Is it really strategy to have a runner on first base and always have the pitcher bunt?
Exactly. That's my point.
Is that really strategy? That's part of the great National League strategic plan that every time there's a runner on first base, the pitcher drops down a bunt and moves him to second? Really? That is just, wow. I am blown away by the strategy of this game.
And I have to admit, it's taken me a long time to get here. I would much rather see pitchers hit anyway because I just like that kind of baseball because that's the baseball I grew up with. That being said, when I'm sitting and paying $40 to $50 a seat, that's not what I want to see then. You know what I mean?
You know, yeah, I'm, when, I'm, I'm just saying, it just, there's nothing to it. I mean, I went to the White Sox Phillies game. This is what, I think 2 years ago. My friend Eddie Russell had tickets to the game. And Quintana was the, it was Hamels against Quintana. So Quintana comes to the plate, I think twice during the course of the game. And everybody's just sitting there like, you gotta be kidding me. He grounded to short. Everybody went, hey, that's good. Waste of time.
By the way, you mentioned Chase Utley. Oh, go ahead.
That's why, for example, in the National League, I really am not that interested in what your ERAs are in the National League. They're giving you free outs. The American League, you don't get free outs.
You would mention Chase Utley. Chase Utley getting coming back in mid-March. Has only played 8 games, but still having his best spring so far in the last 3 years. 7
You'd
hits and 21 at-bats.
You'd be amazed that if you go 0-7 to start the season, you're batting 0.
What?
And say, for example, you had 224 during the spring, and suddenly out of nowhere you start the season 3-9, you're hitting 333.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm sorry. This factual discussion's kind of bugging you?
No, I'm trying to find bright spots. Thank you very much.
No, no, your team's bad. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome. Great to have you back. I took a picture of Don Fisher, the play-by-play voice of Indiana, Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State, and me at the United Center in Chicago. And I was sent the pictures today. And Gary Dolphin of Iowa was still on the air at the time doing his postgame show. Believe me, Iowa does like 1 hour postgame shows. I mean, we kid them about it all the time. Like, I mean, you guys are still on? They're like, I know, we're still on. So I was sent this email and it said, look at this group photo. Moose Scourin, Hector Lopez, and Tom Tresh without Mickey Mantle. Basically of little value. And they were kidding because Dolphin wasn't in the picture. And I wish Gary had been in the picture, by the way, because, you know, that, I felt badly about that. He was still in the air when we took him. I had to get to the bus to get out of there to get back to the hotel and start getting ready for the next game of Purdue. But I love that. He says, here's a great picture of Moose Scourin, Hector Lopez, and Tom Tresh without Mickey Mantle. Basically, of little value. Thank you. Do I need to explain who Moose Scourin and Tom Tresh and Hector Lopez are?
No.
Okay. You're confused. All right.
Doesn't take much to confuse me.
Hey, the Steelers signed Bay today. See that? Huh? Yeah, one more 1 year contract. A lot of speed in the outside, huh? You and Kerry probably, you know, we're probably going back and forth about how exciting that was, huh?
No, can't say we discussed that.
Yes, they're so bitter. When I go there next week, are the two of you going to corner me and talk to me about the Steelers the entire time, or are we going to be allowed to have fun?
No, we can have fun. He did have a 33-yard touchdown this year. I know that. Not Sean Carey, Bay.
Oh. Is it the equivalent of Bob Uecker? I hit a grand slam once. It was a big hit. It made the final 16-2.
Exactly. I'd like to see what the Steelers are doing in anything to shore up that secondary right now.
Well, this is all going to have to come down to the draft, Kevin. It really is going to have to come down to the draft because, I mean, in a free agency, there aren't many options out there left, right? There really aren't. I think anybody who's worth their salt in this thing has already signed their contract.
But the other side of this is I can also understand the Steelers looking at a solid tight end if he's available on the board, too. I mean, yeah.
Well, you got seven rounds, and they have the compensatory pick, which is round six, right? So whether they have eight picks over seven rounds, correct?
I believe you are correct.
So at eight picks in seven rounds, that gives you a lot of... You can draft three defensive backs if you want, draft a linebacker, draft a tight end. Saw Jesse James yesterday. He looked good. He's 6'7 now. He's 262 pounds. He's actually down 10 pounds from where he was playing last year.
Well, I'd like to see him in a Steeler uniform, but I don't think he'd be around.
He could be. I mean, Jesse's not going to be a first-round pick, Kev.
No, I mean in the second round, I don't think he's going to be around.
I don't know. It was interesting. It was an interesting group that came out to watch the Combine last week. The Steelers were represented by Mike Munchak.
Good choice.
Tomorrow, Larry Michael, the voice of the Redskins, on along with Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Reports.